Good morning. It's July the 21st, 2017. This is a conference called the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission. The first item on the agenda is A, supplementing the hydraulic code rule, making record to comply with the agreed court order. Prospectors Administrative Rules Act. This is a briefing by staff. Good morning, staff.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Are there any public on the phone, do you know, Tammy?
No, there's not.
Okay.
Can you announce who staff that's on the call, please?
I have a big staff. I'm going to have them go around the room and introduce themselves. This is Jim Unsworth.
Hi, my name's Joe Storr.
Johnny Moore.
Hi, Joe Storr.
Mick Coe.
Pat Chapman.
Owen Rowe.
Raquel Crozier.
Hi, Morgan Carlson of the Habitat Program.
Jeff Davis.
Nate Pamplin.
Good morning, Commissioners. Bill Freymeyer.
That's the staff here in my office. Thank you.
My God, Director, you have all the horsepower in the room this morning.
I do. We should have probably had it in a bigger room, but we're very cozy.
Did you say horses, Larry? Or?
No, horsepower. Oh. Horsepower, yeah.
Yeah, you bet.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. This is Pat Chapman. I'm the Regulatory Services Coordinator in the Habitat Program. I last spoke to you folks in February regarding a petition to repeal the beach prospecting rules, if you recall that. And as part of that briefing, we briefly discussed part of the issue that at play here today, and that regarded the Beatty appeal on mineral prospecting rules. This is an update kind of where we are with that, because the court, Thurston County Court, made a decision on that. And so what I'm here to do for you today is brief you on that decision, and then in contemplation of action we're going to ask you to take in the August meeting regarding that. There's no decision to be made today, so this is just a briefing on that. So I'm not going to go into the great deal of detail in the Beatty case, but just in relation to the aspects that the court dealt with on the decision you have to make in the future. So that decision, briefly, the decision you'll be asked to make in August is whether the department rules that you adopted in 2014 that became effective in 2015 were in fact the least burdensome alternatives, and whether those rules imposed more than minor costs on mineral prospecting businesses. So I'm going to give a update or a briefing of the background of all that and explain why we think you should make the decisions we're going to ask you to make. So if you recall, you know that DFW issues permits, which we call HPAs, for hydraulic projects, which are projects that occur in or near state waters and affect fish life. And we do that under statutory authority, and over the years, we have developed rules that implement that, and those are currently under Chapter 22660. In 2014, we presented to you and you adopted a whole rule package update for all of the rules related to hydraulic projects, and that resulted in a multi-year project by multiple Habitat Program staff involving the public and stakeholders and other agency staff. And as I said, those came into effect in July 2015. Part of those rules dealt with mineral prospecting activities. And things such as high banking, dredging, panning, probably those activities you've become familiar with. The rules regarding prospecting were not really significant changes overall. We didn't look at a great deal of changes in those. Some of the changes that did occur were we incorporated ocean beach prospects were allowed under the Golden Fish Pamphlet, which is a pamphlet permit which authorizes those majority of activities that prospectors do. Also included was addition of gas-powered mini high bankers, a particular equipment type that streamlined some permitting for that. Other thing was we updated some of the work timing restrictions in certain waters in five counties. as part of rulemaking for significant legislative rules, which is what hydraulic project rules are, we have to comply with other statutes, the Administrative Procedures Act and the Regulatory Fairness Act, and that requires certain things. Among others, we have to do a State Environmental Policy Act review, and in this case, we developed an environmental impact statement for that. Conduct a cost-benefit analysis, and if appropriate from that analysis, then do a Small Business Economic Impact Statement, or an SBEIS. We need to conduct a least burdensome alternatives analysis, and then through the regular rulemaking process, involve the public in notification and hearings of our proposed rules. So we did all that, and you adopted the rules in good faith. The many prospectors were not happy with those rules and the process that happened, and so they joined in the Beatty appeal, which had been ongoing since 2011. They were able to join into that appeal that went to Thurston County Superior Court. And I won't go into all the details of what they were seeking redress on, but they were claiming we didn't have science-based rules. The rules were preempted by federal law. The work window is arbitrary and capricious. We overreached on the beach prospecting rules. Our cost-benefit analysis was flawed, and therefore we didn't publish an SBIS, and that we didn't implement the least burdensome alternative. So that was heard in Thurston County Superior Court, and in March the court issued its ruling, and then later on in June issued an agreed order that deals with what decision you're going to have to make. So the good news is that with the exception of two minor procedural errors, the court decided in favor of the department, that we did, our rules are adequate for protecting fish life. We did the process correctly. There is no conflict with federal law, any of that. So prevailed on that. Where they said we did err was that the commission did not specifically in the record show that they made a determination the rule was the least burdensome alternative, and that there was no specific vote and no record that you decided that there was no significant burden on small businesses. Okay, so the question is then, so how did we get to this place? The staff did all the rulemaking process. You made a decision adopting those rules. So how do we get there? What was the issue? As I said, staff did all the process for the Administrative Procedures Act. We did all that. We did the rules analysis, everything required. What the court decided we erred in was we didn't ask you to specifically vote on those topics, whether they're least burdensome and whether there was a cost to small businesses. So that's what we're going to ask you in October to do, or I'm sorry, in August to vote on specifically. And so what the order says is that the commission has to act by October 31st of this year and make those determinations of did we adopt the least burdensome method of rules, and is there more than minor cost? We're going to recommend that you find that was the case, but you have the option. You could vote to ask us to go through rulemaking again because it isn't the least cost or least burdensome alternative, and that you think there was some impact, and in that case we'd have to go through a small business economic impact statement. If we have to do an SBIS, that has to be done by the end of the year, and rulemaking could take as long as it needs to take. So before I get into the justifications, an explanation of why we think you should take this action, I know I've gone through a bit. Is there any questions right now, or should I go on? No questions, I'll go on.
Well, this is Commissioner Thorburn. Vice Chair, I have a question. It's a little bit off, but I suppose it would be appropriate to ask it now. It's okay with you?
Yep.
So we received some correspondence from the Sierra Club, and they're arguing that the gold and mining pamphlet is only for recreational prospecting. So this small business argument shouldn't apply. These shouldn't be businesses, or it's incorrect to have the rule be pamphlet if these guys are claiming they're businesses. Now, the court's already instructed us to do something, so we'll have to follow the court order. I understand that. But are we creating a liability in the minds of the environmental community, perhaps by applying the pamphlet to people who are claiming they're small business people and not recreational prospectors?
That's a good question, Commissioner. From with our hydraulic project approval, or our hydraulic code rules deal with activities and not who does those activities. So if a business is conducting prospecting using methods covered under the pamphlet or under our rules, they're authorized to do that regardless of whether they're a business or not.
Okay.
So what our analysis looks at is if there are small businesses that are regulated by those activities, are they impacted differently than large businesses? So that's what we're looking at in the analysis of the impacts on businesses. But so no, if there were prospectors who were in it as a business to make money and they could do that activity under our rules in the pamphlet, they're perfectly authorized to do that.
Okay.
So this is Commissioner Baker. I had the same question. But when I read the correspondence that we received from the many interest groups, correspondence looked a lot alike. So somebody's behind that trying to get a message through to us. It seemed like that we made a distinction between commercial activity, small businesses, and recreational activity, and chose in that analysis to lump small businesses with recreational activity for the purposes of the pamphlet or the necessity to get an individual HPA for that activity. Is that accurate or not?
No, as we go back to my previous answer, we're regulating the activity, not who does it. So we're blind to, are they a business? I mean, for the rules themselves, we're blind to what entity is doing it. It's how they're doing it, and are they protecting fish life? The small business economic impact, or the analysis of impacts on whether it was a small business, is a separate question that was required by the Administrative Procedure Act. Right, so we just look at, of those people who are regulated by our rules, what would be the impact if they're small business? And I guess to jump ahead a little bit into my justification, our analysis this summer has shown that there are no small businesses that do small-scale mineral prospecting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
When Pat says that, what he means is the folks that are doing these activities, we can't find any record of them being small businesses.
Mm-hmm. More succinctly, please.
So just to clarify this, if some outfit was out there on the beach using these section dredge mining tools, and it was part of some huge commercial company, would the same rules apply to them?
Well, I'll take a stab at that. This is Jeff. So the Golden Fish pamphlet, really, at the end of the day, especially when we talk about suction dredging, the way the rule is set up, or the rules are set up, is to really kind of manage the scope and scale of the activity, right? So those constraints are around it. So if you had a commercial activity, that wanted to do much more volume, move much more volume, then they don't fall under the Golden Fish pamphlet and therefore would need to come to us and get an individual HPA. Now, that doesn't say that, going with the conspiracy theory, that you couldn't have some sort of commercial interest that just like has some relationships with 100 small mineral prospectors and they're feeding their material to those folks, but I don't know that that's going on at all.
Okay, thanks.
Right, if there are no further questions, I'll go on then. So again, the court's asking you to deal with two issues. One is, did we choose the least burdensome alternative, and was there an economic impact on prospecting businesses? So if we take the least burdensome alternative, in the analysis during rulemaking, we looked at four different alternatives for the mineral prospecting rule, some of which were suggested by the public. At least two of those were suggested by the public during the public comment and review period. The first, you know, that you see in most cases like this is no action. So we keep the 2008 rules. We rejected that alternative because science has moved on. We've got new information at the time regarding fish presence and life histories in certain streams, and we wanted to do some permit streamlining. So that one was rejected for that reason. Another alternative was to place additional restrictions on certain prospecting methods such as suction dredging, which is what you're seeing in some of the comments you've received in emails for this meeting. And so those primarily were from environmental group interests and some tribal concerns. We rejected that because we couldn't really identify significant science that would back up further restrictions from what we have placed. And I guess to get back a little bit on some of the comments in the emails is that some comments you're receiving indicate that we don't regulate dredging, but we do. But we do it through the Golden Fish pamphlet. So,
or individual HPAs.
Or individual, correct. Individual HPAs if they can't comply with the pamphlet. But the restrictions that we have placed on them, we feel are appropriate, and we couldn't justify getting more restrictive in the cases that they're suggesting. Another alternative was to roll back the authorized work window times to some earlier version of the rules before 2008, so maybe the 1999 rules. And again, like the no-action alternative, that really isn't doable because we have new science or more current science which indicates life histories that would be compromised by the old work windows. So the alternative we chose and that you adopted by default was that we cleaned up the previous versions of the rules by incorporating multiple sections into one section. We incorporated beach prospecting into the pamphlet, whereas previously they had to get individual permits. So we streamlined those. Staff and I had issued an average of like 400-plus permits a year for beach prospecting. So we eased that workload and to the prospectors. We included motorized mini high banking in the pamphlet where that wasn't authorized before.
Pat, can I go back to, so the beach
sure.
prospecting, when we say we ease the burden, there was a lot of workload coming at this, and with when we think about the ocean beaches, not a lot of potential fish impacts, especially with how we crafted the beach prospecting rules in Golden Fish. So I don't want folks to think that we just eased our burden and there's more risk to fish when we say that.
Good point.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Smith with a question. You said 400 permits. Is that number stable or constant, or has it been going up or down?
No, the 400 permits was on average how many Ocean Beach individual permits staff and I were writing. And we eliminated that number of individual permits by incorporating beach prospecting into the Golden Fish.
So let me, so that you all, well, you don't all know because some of you are new. So there was this pilot study by state parks for Ocean Beach prospecting. And there's an understanding by some of the prospectors, including Mr. Beatty, that state parks was just going to regulate this. Well, that's not how our rules and laws work. That's not what state parks' understanding was. And so when state parks finally adopted a rule allowing this on the ocean beaches, to answer your question, Commissioner Carpenter, the individual HPAs started coming in and increasing up to 400 HPAs a year annually, and that was about for 2 or 3 years until such time that we incorporated the beach prospecting into the Golden Fish. The majority of the prospectors that we were talking with, not necessarily the leaders that are challenging us, wanted us to do that so that it's easier for them to just go out and recreate on the ocean beach.
This is Commissioner Thorburn. That kind of leads to a question I have. How is this enforced? Is it in the hands of, I remember the issue about the state beaches, in the hands of state parks, essentially?
Essentially, state parks has enforcement, but they don't have the authority to enforce our hydraulic project authority. And so usually the way it is, you know, enforcement has contracts with state parks as well, or state parks enforcement contacts our enforcement officers, or our enforcement officers are doing general policing of the ocean beaches and check these folks.
All right, let me wrap up with the impacts to small businesses, and then we'll finish up with any more questions you have. So the last thing you'll be asked to deal with is, do the rules impact small businesses? And again, like I said earlier, we did analysis of whether the prospectors that get HPAs or are affected by our rules are businesses. And I'll just wrap it up and say, we did analysis. We couldn't find any evidence that those that are impacted by our rules or that gotten HPAs from us are small businesses, and therefore there is no untoward impact on small businesses of prospectors, and therefore a small business economic impact statement isn't required.
So, Pat, let me hop in here real quick, because I think what we're hearing from some of the environmental interests is that they're starting to see some mineral prospectors advertise to take people out and show them how to prospect. And so I don't think that's anything we can deal with through our rules, but it is something that we should monitor and figure out a strategy to deal with if that's appropriate.
Okay, so that's all I have. Like I say, we'll come back to you in August and ask you to make decisions on these. And if you have any further questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Kehoe. I have a quick question. You mentioned that that the department did the analysis, finding that there wasn't any prospecting that was done for business purposes. Was that analysis contained in the record that the court reviewed?
No, this analysis we did was after the court record, and so what the court is saying is not that we didn't do a proper analysis, but that you didn't put it in the record to vote on it. So we did some further looking at it to confirm that our conclusion was correct. We can get you that information after this meeting.
Okay, that was just, you answered my question, and it wasn't part of the record. And so when the judge was reviewing it, said, well, you know, where is this? And so subsequent to the court's order, you've done this. And okay, good. I get it. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Smith, and that last point that you made about the business that they're taking people out. I mean, I think that that has the potential to surface as a sticking point somewhere. If that's just what a club does, taking people out, you know, that could be viewed as an educational activity that a club does. But if they're charging, that could be construed as a business venture. So I don't know who would be looking into that, but, you know, that's something that I see could raise its head down the road.
So I think what you will see, this is Morgan Carlson, I think what you'll see that will get you after the call a little more detail on what exactly we did to try and determine if people were businesses. We weren't able to find any active business licenses for any of the individuals or for any of the areas that these rules apply to that intersect with the small-scale prospecting. So I think it is absolutely true and good to think about some of the things you might hear in testimony from the public. We will likely have prospectors come to the August meeting, and I think you will hear exactly some of those things. And yet, and that's what Pat meant by we weren't able to find any evidence. We weren't able to find any records that support their assertions of being small businesses. You know, they may be taking money.
A clarifier, maybe tease these apart a little bit. So HP
is too loud.
And the Golden Fish pamphlet, like I said, kind of manages the scope and scale of those activities under the Golden Pamphlet. Whether or not, you know, people are actually collecting money to take people out, it isn't something through the HPA program or rules. And as you likely all know, quite frankly, you and the department are in a tough place, and that there's building tension between the prospectors and the environmental community about Clean Water Act and ESA listed species, and that so far we haven't seen a public policy that comes out and helps address some of that tension. But that may be, you know, where you would want to try to deal with this perception that some of these folks are making money. They may not have a license. Maybe they need to be turned over to the Department of Revenue. But that's not something that we can deal with under this authority.
Okay. Thank you.
This is, just a follow-up and just a thought. And I'm sure you folks are consulting with the Attorney General on this, but I mean, one thought would be to just say, well, okay, we don't think there are any businesses, but even if there are businesses, we think that this rule complies with the Administrative Procedures Act, or I'm sure the Regulatory Fairness Act, because, you know, it's the least burdensome regulation. I don't know. I mean, that way you kind of, you got it covered both ways in the event that somebody were to challenge you on that. I mean, that's just one thought. I'm sure you're consulting with the Attorney General, but that's kind of my thought process is, you know, do the, to really, really kind of cover it.
I think that's an astute observation that is along the lines of the kinds of things we've been discussing. The Administrative Procedures Act and the Regulatory Fairness Act don't create a situation where we cannot adopt rules according to our authority if there is a small business impact. Rather, we have to do the assessment to find out if there is one or not, and if so, consider that and determine what alternatives there might be. And so I think that's very consistent with what I just heard you say, Commissioner.
And I would think, too, that the Regulatory Fairness Act only imposes an obligation to look at the impact on current businesses, not to speculate about what kinds of new businesses might be created in the future, because that could lead you into some pretty wide-ranging, extremely burdensome analysis. So I don't think that the future businesses that could arise are an expectation that we're going to analyze. So maybe we need a little bit more information on the expectations that the law imposes on what we're going to analyze in small business impact analysis.
Our understanding is also that we look at current businesses. The law does not require us, as you say, to speculate about future businesses. And so you'll see in the information that we'll provide after the call how we went about sort of using the standard procedures of working to find what those records are, looking for business licenses and so on.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like, and I'd also want to say, I've been observing this process of developing rules for small-scale prospecting since I joined the commission. And all that I've ever seen from staff is extra effort going beyond the call, working with the prospectors. We had so many hearings that I thought it was kind of over the top for the significance of the activity. And in fact, I remember asking staff how much money we spent on all the hearings, all the outreach, and it was a considerable amount of money. So I think we've done a tremendous amount looking for that right balance, least burdensome streamlining, because making the regulations less burdensome to the prospectors has also made it less burdensome to the department, while keeping to our mission, protecting fish. So I think we've done an extraordinary job, just expended a tremendous amount of time and effort and money on this subject. And I'm really comfortable that we can tie up these last two items and not have to deal with it again in court.
Commissioner Thorburn, I think that's a really useful history. As I've been involved in this on my short time on the commission, I am struck that the challenge, I think, comes from a principle that's held by prospectors, and that is that the 1872 mining law preempts state control, and you know, these challenges just keep coming because of that strong belief in the prospector community.
Right, and they're not going to give that up. I mean, they always fall right back to that point.
Good discussion. Do we? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is Dave.
Hey, Larry. Sorry.
Barbara, is that you?
Yeah, but I'm gonna let Dave go.
Go ahead, David. Then Barbara's turn.
I was just going to, Brad, your question about are people creating a business by instructing people on the practice of prospecting, just as a sort of an allegory, there has been issues in the fishing world. People that didn't want to pay for a guide's license and go through that process for fishing were calling themselves fishing instructors, and they would go out on someone's boat and then instruct them on fishing, but wouldn't be a guide. And then that way they avoided the costs and expense and regulation of being a fishing guide. So there's been that issue, and I'm not sure how closely that relates, but listening to what has been said today, whether it probably wouldn't apply in that there's no regulation on a business or an individual that practices without a business license under these rules. But I just thought I could mention that as a potential issue down the road.
Okay, Commissioner Baker?
Well, I want to say again,
like Commissioner Thorburn, hearing the history of this is really helpful. Also, thinking about whether how much time we're spending on this is, it's a big issue. But the thing that I wanted to say is that the other thing that much of the correspondence that we received mentioned is that the states surrounding us are much more vigilant about regulating this motorized suction dredge mining, which seems to imply that there's some concern amongst the environmental community that we have included that activity in the Golden Fish pamphlet. I understand that really is a different issue than what we're dealing with today, because what we're dealing with today is whether the department complied with everything it had to under the APA and the Regulatory Fairness Act. I'm real comfortable with that. But I am curious about what those other states regulate that we don't. And if that's easily accessible information, I'd like to know it.
Good point.
This is Margan. We can definitely do a little bit of a quick assessment about what the other states are regulating and how they're doing it. There's a link to what Jeff was describing earlier, that a key ingredient in some of those other states is that they have gone through litigation that helped prompt their legislative bodies to get to the place where they supported that public policy and that includes regulation. I don't know if you want to say more, Jeff, about that.
Yeah, I think we're happy in the Habitat program to sit down and talk with any of you about kind of the history and what's going on in the current state and what we see coming our way, because we're not out of this. We have a rule challenge now by Cascadia Wildlands on the other side of this, saying that they're not strong enough, so now we're under rule challenges by the prospectors, and we're under rule challenges by environmental interests. I don't think the Center for Biological Diversity lawsuit has gone away permanently. I think they're spending time on the federal level trying to defend some of the gains on the environmental side of the spectrum. To answer your question, Golden Fish, Washington used to be the most progressive regulator of these activities. Mm-hmm. And through time, what you've seen is Clean Water Act and ESA challenges, mostly by Center for Biological Diversity. So, yes, those legislatures have responded with public policies to better protect the environment and fish, and they've done so under the threat of federal court decisions.
Any other comments on the agenda item A? To be continued. Thank you.